few conversations between friends or indeed strangers in Aotearoa New Zealand pass without some reference to the weather. Is the rain coming? Is the wind direction changing? Can the barbecue go ahead? Our guest is meteorologist and head of weather communications at Met Service, Lisa Murray, who talks about the weather for a living. But she and her colleagues also carry a heavy responsibility when it comes to predicting severe weather events in time to save lives and livelihoods. And with more severe weather events happening more often due to climate change, those calls are required more frequently. Lisa's one of the authors of a new book put out by Met Service, which looks at the history and science behind our worst weather. It's simply called New Zealand's Wild Weather. Lisa's with us now. Kia ora, welcome.
Kia ora, lovely to talk to you today.
I should say, listeners, if you do have questions, send them in, but please don't do them all at the last minute, and then we'll have time to put them to Lisa a little bit later. One of the obvious ones, Lisa, is why our weather is so dramatic and changeable. What sort of characterises it and why?
Well, it's really our setup. You know, we're a group of islands in the middle of a vast ocean. We have warm northerly winds coming down from the tropics. We have the real cold southerlies coming straight off the ice. And also then our topography, you know, we can go look at the west coast of the South Island. They go from sea level right up into the Southern Alps, really quite steeply. So we do get a lot of different weather. The west coast can have the rain, but by the time the air gets over into the east coast, it's much drier. So we can have droughts on one side, wet on the other side of the country, warm in the north, cold in the south. So we do get a real variable weather.
Which makes life challenging in your profession. What's the technology that's used now to forecast weather?
Well, there's loads of technology. In fact, basically a blizzard of weather data arrives at Met Service every day. The first scientific manual observation was taken back in 1861. And that was to do with the fishing boats shipping at the time. And now when I think of it, that observation you get maybe one a day, maybe even months apart as the ships come in and out of port, to now a meteorologist, we sit down at our computers and we're getting minute by minute updates from over 200 stations that are automatically sending data to us. So a phenomenal amount of observational data. And that's not the only observations we're getting, because we have radar, we have upper air balloons, buoys, aircraft reports, shipping observations, and even satellite images from geostationary satellites that are 36,000 kilometers up in the air. And they're looking down at us, giving us, you know, resolution to about 1 kilometer of the clouds and the water vapor that we can see over New Zealand.
So how do you make sense of such a mass of data?
Well, this is why it's good to be a qualified meteorologist. That certainly helps. Because you have so much data coming in, one of the actual hardest things for a meteorologist is balancing the amount of data you're looking at along with the weather models as well, because the observation tells you what's happening right now. But we also put all those observations into these global models. And then the global models do a step-by-step approach into the future of what they predict the weather is going to be. Now, we get a number of these models into Met Service, and we use the observations to see which one is doing best over New Zealand. And sometimes, you know, if you get one that's just spot on, that makes our life as a meteorologist really easy. But for those days that the models, you know, we've ones from different parts of the globe, from the UK, from America, and if they aren't aligning correctly, that's when we really need that experience of the meteorologist. And we have meteorologists that have been there for years. You know, the Met Service has been doing this long before I was born. But it is that knowledge that you can bring to know the limitations and the strengths of these fantastic models that do all these complex equations for us. And using that to, along with your local knowledge of New Zealand, to make the best forecast for the public, especially to keep them safe during severe weather events. And also we have clients that want more specific information as well, because they're making those calls that can mean a lot of money and a lot of influence on their businesses.
Well, we've had quite a year for the weather. even by our own standards. Severe flooding in Canterbury in May, and then on the west coast in June. And I think were there two red warnings this year? How common is that?
Yeah, that's right, Catherine. Two red warnings. It's not common. To have events of that sort of significant nature quite close together, though it does happen from time to time. And in 2019, Met Service introduced this red warning because with the changing climate and climate change and with these really severe events, what we found was we needed a way of letting people know when it was, yes, this is severe weather, but this particular one, we're expecting, we could see state of emergencies, we're expecting massive impacts for people. You know, it's a life and death forecast at that point. So, yeah, that's why the red warnings have been introduced. So we have only issued three in total since they started mid-2019, two of which have been this year and quite close together. If you remember, the Canterbury was the end of May, beginning of June, and there was 300 millimetres of rain fell in the high country there. One station even got about half a metre, which is a phenomenal amount of rain in a short period of time. And then when, you know, not too long later in June, Buller and Westland, actually it was July, 15th of July, got about 300 millimetres in the ranges there. And again, a state of emergency declared for both of those, massive impacts for the people in the regions.
Have we concluded why? I recall hypotheses, at least at the time, that what we might be starting to see, or what we might be seeing with the particular weather pattern we've had this year, is that these heavy rain events, they just sit longer in a geographical place. And we had farmers saying, you know, you expect it to move on in a matter of hours, perhaps, and it just sat and sat and sat. Has there been any conclusion with respect to these two big events this year?
Well, what we're seeing, actually, the talking of weather sitting, that was more like the Auckland event, if you remember, in August, the end of August, they had a band of rain that stalled over Auckland and had embedded thunderstorms in it. Very tricky to forecast, actually. You know, we talk about tricky forecast. That one was particularly complex. And they got ranging from 150 to, you know, 250 millimetres of rain in 24 hours, while the other parts of the region only had 20 millimetres in that same time. So a very localised, but it's a stalled front. So we are seeing those, certainly, but we have seen them in the past too. And I guess what we're seeing also is if they stall over farmland and land that's used to, say, the West Coast, that's used to a bit more rainfall, they're not having as big an impact. But for those that are over, you know, urban areas or areas, new built spaces, that's why drainage and all those things, stormwater, have to be taken into such consideration. Because at the end of the day, we have a warmer atmosphere, and warmer atmosphere then leads to more moisture in that atmosphere. So when it falls as rain, there's more rain to be had. So we will see more of these extreme events. Now, it's not to say that we won't have fine days. And it's not to say that, you know, I saw a study about West Coast of the South Island, for instance, where they will have most of the days will be as normal as they've always seen. But there'll be that one or two days where it really pours down. And they're the days that we'll be seeing, you know, those extreme events that have the big impacts. But, you know, rest assured, Met Service severe weather team is watching this closely, and we will let the public know and let our clients know that when there's these big events coming out, and you'll see that through our severe warning system, which is spoken about in the book as well. We go through, you know, what defines severe weather and what are the criteria for each of the orange warning, the red warning. But as the National Weather Service, at the core of what we do is trying to keep people safe.
What is happening in that forecasting room? Who is in there? And what's happening when you've got a massive weather event building?
Well, we're based up in Kelburn, in up on the hill in the Botanic Gardens. Fantastic option to see all around Wellington. And in the forecast room, right up at the top of that building, you have a number of different areas, right? It's a big open floor plan. We have an aviation section that's just focused there. We've marine section. We have convection, that's your thunderstorms. We have that broad scale severe weather. You know, when I say broad scale, I'm talking 1,000 square kilometers or more. When I'm then we have public forecasting, and we have a communication team that does our social media, our press releases, and then we also have our consultants that are doing stuff for clients as well. So you can imagine that's quite a lot of people, a lot of meteorologists, all focused on the same thing, getting that story out to the public, to our clients, making sure people stay safe. And when you have these really big events, we bring in extra people, you know, just so they can be looking at more detail at the forecast or answering those calls directly to media to get that message out to people. So it is, although we're very focused on the impacts, and obviously that can have a detrimental effect to people's lives and livelihoods. There's also an adrenaline that you're running on in there to make sure you get the best forecast out to New Zealanders. And, you know, our severe weather team, because we have a team that focus directly on that, they issue the warnings. They work in with regional councils. So if you see a red warning, it's not just from Met Service. We have spoken to the regional councils, to their hydrologists, to civil defence in that region. And it is only a collaborative approach then that we would issue a red warning. Because at the end of the day, they're the people that know on the ground who are their vulnerable people, what are their vulnerable rivers, that kind of thing. And Met Service is trying to work more and more with communities in that space so that that message can get out to people.
Are you also using citizen data in some cases? Social media, especially when events are building or happening?
Yeah, we do. We have on our website, metservice.com, we have a page called WOW, not World of Wearable Arts, but it's a program that we brought in from the UK. And people can put their weather data from their own weather station in their home, in their school, on their farm. They can actually input that into a map of the whole of New Zealand. And we also add all our official sites that are calibrated to the World Meteorological Standard. So they would be quite flash weather stations in comparison to what I have in my garden, for instance. But it gives you a good scan of all that data. You can look at the rainfall, the temperatures. So they're used in that sort of way. And we also, in social media, we have meteorologists literally sitting on our social media watching it. So it gives the public a chance to interact with a qualified meteorologist so they can ask those important questions. And we do get great responses. We have really good followers who send us pictures, give us updates. You know, the front has just come through Dunedin, or I've look at the hail that we've got at Timaru, you know, those kind of messaging. So we've quite a good relationship with our followers.
So those individual experts, aviation forecasters, marine, are they getting specific data relating to their sector, or are they more using it to forecast for shipping, for aircraft? What are they doing?
Oh, so they have access to all the data, and we make sure that everybody has access to that. And when I say aviation section, basically, if you've been on an aircraft in and out of New Zealand, they've written a forecast for you. You know, that's that team. Aviation forecasts are written in code. They also monitor the volcanic ash if a volcano in the Pacific erupts, or even further afield, certainly over New Zealand. And so they're doing all in that space, very aviation forecast, turbulence, all that kind of stuff. Then you go to marine, and because we're an island in the middle of a vast ocean and just our situation, we actually are responsible for just under 15% of the globe's oceans. We do the forecasts and the high seas warnings for them at Met Service. So we have a team that are working just specifically on getting those forecasts out, along with a recreational forecast for the coastal areas of New Zealand as well. And the swell warnings that we sometimes get, you know, if we have a big swell coming into, say, the south coast of Wellington, or affecting, you know, Gisborne, they will come from that team too. And then we also have the public forecasting section, many sections, I'm afraid. And they're writing the forecast that you get on your Met Service app or on the website. So you can see, so your updated forecast there, the worded forecast is written by an actual meteorologist. for the first 5 days. So we're going through that constantly and being updated, and we're 24/7 operation there. So they're constantly being monitored and updated as well.
And things like, I know with ex-cyclones Geeta and Fahi, it was things like trying to get road workers in before they struck so that they could be there to then deal with the aftermath, right? This is some of the other ways that the warnings can be used. Are we seeing a noticeable change in behaviour? We're talking about ex-cyclones here, and we think typically of what might be high impact weather in New Zealand, and it might be sudden snowfalls, and you cover this in the book, right? Or it might be flooding, or it might be wind warnings. But are we going to have to get used to changing patterns, and is the expertise going to have to get used to things like perhaps understanding what cyclones look like? I know it's a different story, but we've had these mini tornadoes, haven't we, in Auckland beginning to occur. Are we seeing some pattern changes that is affecting the kind of types of weather that your experts are going to be increasingly on the lookout for?
Oh, look, we're monitoring all aspects of the weather all the time at Met Service. We have a severe weather bench that's specifically focused on that. But what you'd mentioned, you know, Fahi and Geeta, and I particularly remember them at the time, our broadcast meteorologist, because we do videos on our website as well for people if that's how they like to get their weather information. And I was doing them and the normal social media and media at the time. So it was quite a busy event. But what really struck me in that event was not only did Fahi come down, that was February 2018. Fahi came down over the South Island, crossing the South Island, but it had a broader effect. And this is these ex-tropical cyclones, they're not those tight low as we see them up in the tropics, but they spread out as they come down south and they affect a large area. So we had so many watches and warnings, like a plethora of them across the country for that event. And literally 2.5 weeks later, another event came down. I think it was the 20th when Geeta came down and affected very similar areas. You remember, Tasman got hit in both. So I was working with NZTA at the time. So yeah, I'm talking to them, we gave them a heads up about a week out, letting them know there's a possibility it could come down because there's such uncertainty with the tracks of these cyclones that come down as well. That's one of those tricky forecasts I talked about. And so we're talking with them, giving them the heads up. And I think that's the value of a forecast going forward, is understanding the uncertainty within a forecast so that you can make plans and make decisions about your business, what's best for your business, and also, you know, safety for families. I remember Cook coming down through the Bay of Plenty area and the NZTA talking to me about, you know, we got a great message out about how severe it would be for a short period of time. But people changed their action, and that's key here. People need to change their action when they see that red warning. It is not the time to just continue as normal. You know, these are the events that are going to really stick out.
New Zealand's Wild Weather is the book we're discussing. It's been put out by Met Service. Lisa Murray is one of those meteorologists, and I have got probably the most random range of questions I think I've ever seen for you in a moment, Lisa. And I'll excuse you if you pass the baton on some of them. You're listening to on RNZ National. Just before we get to them, though, some of the weather records in the book, the hottest temperature in New Zealand, I think it was early 70s, wasn't it?
It was, yeah, down in Rangiora, 42.4 degrees Celsius was the temperature there. And we've had a few that have been close, but nothing has beaten that yet. Lots of other good records in there as well. The one I quite like is the lightning, you know, but being a meteorologist, those severe weather, real intense weather events like lightning and thunder and lightning really impress me. And we get near enough to 47,000 lightning strikes on the land over New Zealand per year. That's the average, which I always think is quite interesting. But one of the facts that I didn't know until I started, you know, researching for the book was the charge in a lightning bolt. You know, I never really thought about it. And typically there's, you know, 300 million volts in a lightning bolt. And that really blew my brain.
And what is it with thunder? Isn't the sound, oh, you have to help me out here. Isn't the sound, it's actually the lightning coming down, striking the earth, and actually heading back up again. And I think the sound relates to that movement, does it not? Just can you help me with that one?
Yeah, absolutely. So if we have lightning, you can only have thunder if you have lightning. Because sometimes we hear the thunder, but we don't see the lightning. But the lightning actually causes the sound that is the thunder. So the lightning strikes, and it is the pressure difference
Air
of the
pressure.
gap that lightning makes. And really, the sound we're hearing for the thunder is as after the lightning strike, as that gap fills back up. Just imagine it clapping together, filling that void up again. And that's the sound of the thunder that we're hearing.
It's incredible temperature and incredible air pressure changes. Now, the coldest, we talked about the hottest, which was February 7th, 1973 in Rangiora, 42.4 degrees Celsius. Ophir's a lovely little spot, but it is little, in central Otago. It got the coldest temperature on record, I think.
It did, and that's actually a recent record because what happened there was the records back in the day when it was recorded, they were taken manually and then they were sent off by post to the central office. I think it was in Christchurch at the time, and in a if you go back in the history of these things, the clerk, I think, and I could be corrected here, the clerk at the time went sick. And so there was a temporary clerk trying to keep up with all these observations coming in, and he fell behind. So they weren't put on record with our until a few years ago. Someone found sort of noticed the sort of history behind it and found these old documents. In fact, I think Georgina Griffin, one of our consultant meteorologists up in Auckland, was the one who put them onto this. And Niwa did some research around it and found that we had actually this record, which is fantastic.
It was Ophir, but now I'm
Not
reading
fantastic.
there was a forgotten record sheet revealing the chilliest day. The Ophir one was minus 21.6 degrees Celsius. There was a minus 25.6 in Eubern Ranfurly on July 17th,
Oh, that's right. Sorry,
1903.
yes.
So that's the
That's
forgotten one,
what.
yeah?
That's the forgotten one. Sorry, yes, yeah.
Goodness. Okay, now here we go and buckle in. Staying with records,
Okay, go
is
for
it
it.
true there was such a bad storm in 1936 or thereabouts that it even snowed at Cape Reinga? And a cyclone that year was worse than the Wahine storm in 1968. Do you remember a 1936 being prominent?
1936, a bit before my time, but we have a wonderful meteorologist who retired recently called Eric Brenstrom. You may have heard him talking. He's a great historian as well, and he loves to research this, you know, the old stories around the weather and goes into all the documents of the time. And certainly that year we had some significant storms. It was a massive snowstorm that stuck on the ground for I think weeks, if I remember correctly, down in the South Island. I couldn't confirm if there was snow up in Cape Reinga off the top of my head. I think there was flakes, certainly people saw sort of flakes of snow, but I don't know if anything settled anywhere around that northern region off the top of my head, I'm afraid.
Now we're getting into this is a good question because it speaks to your point about how much you can rely on a forecast depending on how far out it is. I knew we'd get one of these. I'm competing in an ultra adventure race called the Revenant in Northern Southland in January on the 13th, 14th, and 15th. Can you give me an idea of what the weather will be like? How far out can you forecast?
Well, this becomes a whole question in regard to. I'll tell you what we do on the website. We have meteorologists that look at the first 5 days and they write a forecast for that. The second 5 days are automatically generated from model data. And the reason for that is as you go, basically, as each day, as you go a bit further out, there is more uncertainty. And if by the time we, if I was to do a forecast for January now, that uncertainty would be really large. What you can look at, though, in that kind of space to give you a sort of a broader view of what type of weather we would have in that stage. So you may or may not know that the Bureau of Meteorology in Australia have declared it's a La Nina event. They're already seeing that easterly winds and that flow and that feedback loop happening. And what we get in that kind of cycle is the ridge of high pressure, which during the summer normally sits over the North Island and gives them all that really settled, lovely weather. It moves further south. And so we get it over more near the South Island. And people go, oh, great ridge of high pressure. That's fantastic. Now, this is not means that you wouldn't get fronts and things moving through in between. I'm talking about a general pattern. But, and this is the big but with when the highs move south, they're no longer protecting New Zealand from anything that's happening up in the northern Tasman Sea or the Coral Sea. And this is when you get those windows of opportunity for things to come down from that, tropical air and bring down some subtropical rainfall over New Zealand. We also, it opens the doors to the potential for ex-tropical cyclones to come down or even deep lows from that space. So because of that, it can be quite changeable as those systems move through.
So
So in summary,
is that in general, or is that particular to this forthcoming summer?
that's particular to this forthcoming
Oh,
summer, I'm afraid.
okay.
Now, look, it doesn't mean that you
I know.
won't have lovely days. People forget that. It doesn't mean you won't have sunshiny barbecue days, that you can go to the beach. It just means that it is one of those summers that you do need to have the Met Service app on your phone so you can check it every day.
Okay.
It is that kind of event,
Let's see if we can crack through some more. And they might, they're right over my head. You let me know if they're in your purview. Has anyone at Met Service looked at the potential impact of Hadley Cell's tracking weather systems further south?
We look at a lot of things to do with sort of the broader seasonal. Like I mentioned, ENSA there with the La Nina. We also, that's only about, say, 25% influence over the weather that we get. We also have the Southern Angular Mode. We call it the SAM, lots of acronyms in weather, as you can well imagine. And it's basically the storminess of the Southern Ocean. So that is in a positive phase at the moment, and has been for a while. So we haven't been getting really stormy weather, so to speak, which, it can be good for us, certainly. We have seen, look at Waikato, they had one of their, nor if not their warmest November on record. Just come through, and I think a lot of people up north are feeling that mugginess in the air, and there will be more of that this summer as well. But also along with the salmon and the ENSA, we are also looking at things called the MJO and all these different aspects. So they're sort of at the next level down from that Hadley Cell. I don't know if anyone, we do have research teams at Met Service, obviously, that are doing lots of different and interesting things, but I don't know if they're working on that. But
Okay.
one of the things they, if I can just tell you, one of the projects they're working on, which might interest people, is they're working on a project, and it's a collaborative project with the University of Victoria Wellington, the University of Canterbury, NIWA, and Bodir Scientific. And it's to try and look at a severe weather event and to be able to say how much of that was due to climate change. Because at the moment you can do these kind of studies, but they'll take, half a year to do all the data. So they're working on a system that can do that within 1 to 2 weeks, which would be really useful for us and for the lay people, to understand the impacts of climate change on our weather here in New Zealand.
Wonderful. There are many more as well, but we'll have to let you go. Someone just asking when that hot summer we've been promised will start. Can you help with that one?
Yeah, sure. I think overall temperatures are usually in this weather pattern, usually warmer. But when people say a warmer summer, it doesn't necessarily mean there won't be cloud, I'm afraid. So you'll find with those muggy summers, there is bits of cloud and drizzle around, but it may be warmer temperatures. So just understanding the difference. There will be sunshine too, though. I don't want to be sounding all
No, I know.
pessimistic.
Very quickly,
And I guess.
I want to sneak in one more for you. Are we actually getting more annual rainfall per annum, or is it heavy falls interspersed with longer dry periods, but no higher total rainfall?
We are seeing records being broken. I'm 15 years at Met Service now, and it amazes me every year to see more and more records, especially temperature records, but also rainfall, wind gusts, that kind of thing, for the different regions. We are seeing more of that. I think the studies certainly show that it's not that we're going to have, more tropical cyclones coming down or more really significant storms, but the ones that we do have the potential to cause more impacts because they'll have more rainfall, there'll be worse flooding. We can have more drought because we dry out quicker because the temperatures are warmer, all that kind of stuff. But we do go into more detail of this in New Zealand's Wild Weather. We give great eyewitness accounts for people that are on the ground, and then we go into sort of the science behind that event as well. Hopefully it's a good stocking filler for Christmas.
Thank you so much, Lisa Murray. And the book is New Zealand's Wild Weather, explained by the experts at Met Service, of whom she is one, and it's published by Penguin Books.